2 Samuel chapter 20. I want to talk to you tonight about three crisis leaders, three different leaders in a crisis. Well, you say, well, I'm not a leader, so I'm out. Well, may I remind you, very simple definition of leader is what? Someone who leads. So let me give you this idea. If someone has ever asked you your opinion, you gave it, and they agreed with it and made a decision based on it, you are a leader. Okay, so that could be a mother, a grandmother. It could be a young person. It could be, you know, old people. We all lead. Now, you understand when I say old people, we're not talking about anybody in here. It's other people out there. Okay, you know that. I know that. All right. 2 Samuel. But the whole point of this lesson tonight is to look at three different kinds of leaders and see if we can glean something in the storyline. The things that were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the scriptures, might have hope. And also that we might have instruction. Here we are in 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse number 4. Then said the king to Amasa, assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. And David said to Abishai, now shall Sheba the son of Bichri do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us. Remember, Sheba's the guy that stands up and becomes the de facto leader of the Israelites. Verse 7, and there went out after him, after Abishai, Joab's men, and the Cherethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men. And they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba the son of Bichri. When they were at the great stone which is in Gibeon, they're heading north, almost all the way up to the top is where they end up, where Sheba is barricading himself. Amasa went before them. So Amasa figures out that he better get there. He's not going to get anything. So even though he didn't have his guys ready, he runs ahead of them somehow. And Joab's garment that he had put on was girded on him, unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins and the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. Now, the big question is, was that on purpose or was it on accident? And Joab said to Amasa, art thou in health, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. Why? Because he just dropped it and he picked it up. That's what you do with stuff that you drop. You pick it up. But all of a sudden, Joab has the sword in his hand. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, he that favoreth Joab and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now, let's go back through and look at three different types of leaders that we will find in a crisis. Now, I don't know that these are the only types, but these seem to be pretty indicative or typical. And we can learn something through them here. Let's look at the first leader, which is Amasa. Amasa was the kind of leader who was authorized but clueless. Authorized but clueless. And he was a man that obviously lacked ability. When we look back in chapter 18, 19 and so forth, we can see that David was in the wilderness, and there was a guy in charge in Jerusalem. What was his name? When David was out in the wilderness, Absalom's the guy. All right. And who was Absalom's right hand man? Who was his general? It was Amasa. Amasa was the guy that was in charge. But what's interesting about Amasa is he was, I don't know if it's interesting, it's true. He was inept. He didn't know what he was doing. He couldn't handle it. He lacked ability. He could not defeat David when David was on his heels, and he had a much larger force than David did. But it appears that he was not good at rallying people to his mission. And it reminded me of Lot when Lot went to try to talk to his sons-in-law and said, "Hey, we're supposed to get out of here." And the Bible says that he seemed to them as one that mocked. They thought, "Lot, such a jokester, this guy. This guy, he's hilarious. Get a load of this guy." That's the relationship that he had with them. So when he had something serious to say, they didn't think he was being serious. And that's kind of what reminds me here of Amasa. Nobody really took him seriously. Another thing about Amasa, this guy who was authorized but clueless, is that he seems to take mercy very lightly. I want you to look at chapter 17. Not 17 here. Look at chapter 19, verse 11. Let's get some backstory here. We'll go back and forth a little bit. 19:11. And King David, this is David when he's out in the wilderness before he crosses the Jordan. He's coming back towards Jerusalem, but they're not ready yet. Absalom's dead. And King David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, saying, "Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house? Seeing the speech of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house. Ye are my brethren, ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? And say ye to Amasa, art not thou of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab." So before David ever came back into the city, he told Amasa, "You're going to be the guy." And he said, "Joab used to be the guy, but you're the guy now." Let's go back to chapter 17. Look at 17 and watch. What's interesting about Amasa, he seems to be a foil. He seems to be a convenient window dressing, a piece of furniture. You know how they stage new homes with furniture that does not belong to the person that's selling it, nor does it belong to the person that's going to buy it? Why? It's stuff that to help you imagine. It's a stand-in. And that seems to be what Amasa is. Look at chapter 17, verse 25. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab. Isn't that weird? Absalom, it's close. We heard tonight about the Warrens of Belfast, and you almost get that idea when you start reading the scripture, because people are connected that in our governments and things like that, our leadership structures, we would not allow. We would not allow this, because Absalom is a cousin of Amasa. Look what it says in verse 25, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, who's that? The daughter of Nahash, sister to Zeruiah, Joab's mother. All right, so Abigail and Zeruiah were sisters. Abigail had a son named Amasa. Zeruiah had three sons that you know very well. And we won't look at a bunch of scriptures here, but I'll have you write them down just to remind yourself of these people. Because sometimes when you're reading the scripture, because you can't see them, you kind of get lost. And the more that you read it and the more that you dig into it, you'll see their personalities and you can see, quote unquote, see. Like, how many of you would say you have a somewhat of a visual in your mind of David? You have kind of a visual of that? Why do you never get confused between David and Doeg? I mean, for me, it's because Doeg, he looks nothing like David. Remember, Doeg is the one that killed all the priests there? Just a violent man. I never get confused, even though their names start with the same letter, because they obviously have different spirits. As you get into Scripture and you read it more and study it, you'll begin to sense their spirit and what kind of person they are. And no, not every bad person is your mother-in-law. They don't all get to look like her, okay? It's kind of like a joke. Amen? See, people always laugh after I tell them it was a joke. It apparently wasn't funny. Now they get it. But okay, this is helpful because when I look at Abishai, you got all these A's. How many A's can there be? Well, there's a lot of them. So David had three famous nephews. They were the sons of Zeruiah. He would say, "Ye sons of Zeruiah are too hard for me." Okay. So who was Zeruiah? It was David's sister. So these are David's nephews. Number one, Joab. He's the commander of David's army. Number two is Abishai. A-B-I-S-H-A-I. He was listed in the list of David's mighty men. He's listed among the 37 mighty men. He was not in the top three, but he was chief of the second three. All right, so you had the top three and you had the levels down. He's like, I'm top of the three. Yeah, but you're not the top of the top three. So just, you know, he had to know his place. But I'm sure he did. He had a brother like Joab. I'm sure he knew his place. Joab. And then you had Asahel, who was also one of the sons of Zeruiah. I don't know why he wasn't the sons of the father. It's the sons of the mother. I mean, apparently these guys were pretty serious. And they were pretty intense. I don't know what mama was like, but sometimes, I don't know what it made. Hagar the Horrible comes in my mind with the woman, and I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just, it's just in my head. And she has a battle axe, and sometimes she is, I don't know, but anyhow, moving on. Asahel. Anybody remember what was one of the things that distinguishes Asahel? Something that he had a strength. He was fast. He was quick. And what's interesting about him, of course, is that his greatest strength was actually his greatest liability. He thought that he would win by being fast. And what actually happened was he died by being fast. Because it somehow Abner killed him with the back end of the spear. I don't know if Abner pulled on the reins. I don't know what happened there. But apparently being fast was not all it cracked up to be. So these three guys are the sons of Zeruiah. And really, there's some good things that they did, but they're a mixed bag. And I can't help but say, but feel this about them. They're the perfect cousins. You know what I mean? Like, they do some good stuff, but they also do some really bad stuff. Like, they were okay, but they just would, you know, they were known. And that's kind of what it was for David. David had these cousins, the sons of Zeruiah. And what's interesting is that Amasa was also a cousin, but he was a cousin from another mother, from his mother, which is another sister of David. So it looks like David had seven brothers, two sisters, Zeruiah and Abigail. And it's kind of weird. He married Abigail, right? A woman named Abigail. He had a sister named Abigail. I know what that's like. I've got a sister named Jessica, married to Jessica. I'm throwing out stuff here, guys. This is great stuff. I don't know. I'm just trying to wake you up, trying to help you. Okay. but what's interesting about this guy is that you notice in chapter 17, verse 25, that when Absalom revolts, David leaves, and Absalom chooses Amasa, who is his cousin, who is David's nephew, and he puts him in this place and says, "You're in charge now instead of Joab." So he had been a part of Absalom's rebellion, but when David returned victoriously to Jerusalem, rather than putting Amasa to death for his part in the rebellion, he made him captain of the host instead of a guy who had been a proven leader. And what we find here is it seems like with this delay in verses number 4 and 5, he said, 3 days, be there. And he tarried longer than the set time. And so David said, you know what? This thing is going to get out of hand. This is going to be worse than it was with Absalom because he can't get people together in 3 days. And as you're looking at this, the reason why I said authorized but clueless, he seems to have a lack of ability to gather people together or drag them. And then something else, he seems to have no understanding of the privileged position that he has. He doesn't understand that he has been given a great opportunity to prove himself to David. Why? Because he had been a part of the rebellion, and instead of killing him, David said, "You're still the guy. Now, why? Well, we know partly probably because he was related to him. But that doesn't always make it better. Sometimes that makes it worse when people are related to you and they mess up. So, I mean, he's on thin ice here. And Mark Rutland wrote this about him. I thought this was very interesting. If ever he needed to show he respected David's authority, if ever he needed desperately to demonstrate loyalty and full dedication to David's kingdom, surely it was in the face of this new rebellion by Sheba. By being late to the rendezvous, he gave his enemies plenty of reason to doubt both his loyalty and his leadership. He had just been a part of a rebellion. He had received mercy from the king. And now he jumps right back in. Now he's right back in the middle of a rebellion, not him personally, but now he has an opportunity to show, I was wrong in that. I shouldn't have done that. And Mark Rutland went on to say this, not everyone, this is talking about a guy coming in to a new job where he's privileged to have the job, and, you know, there's some thin ice here. He said, not everyone is going to immediately discern how wonderful, loyal, effective, and virtuous you are. You may just have a few along the way that need to be won over. Don't give them proof that their doubts about you are justified. Now, obviously, it has great application for me personally. But I would say that often we come into situations not recognizing that this new situation, while it is a new chapter and a fresh start, it is a reset button pushed by a merciful God, and we dare not look at the situation as if it's owed to us or drag our feet or act like, you know what, hey, God's delivered me before. You know, it's like that punk that always gets out of being, you know, held responsible, and he thinks because he's never gotten a ticket that it's okay for him to drive that way. And everything is like, I just live on, you know, what you're living on is the mercy of God. And you need to remember that it is very kind of God to give you another opportunity. So mind your P's and Q's. Like, walk carefully with this thing. So let's say you burned a bridge with your, you know, your daughter-in-law or your sister or your neighbor or something. And then God gives you, miraculously, another opportunity. Well, take that seriously and be careful with this thing. Remember the man who owed 20 pence to his Lord, and the Lord forgave him, and then he turned around 20,000, and then the Lord forgave him of this great sum of money, and he was flush with this feeling of newness, and I've got a new lease on life. Everything is great now, and he walks outside and he sees somebody that owes him, you know, $2, and he walks up to him and he's like, hey, when are you going to get that $2 back to me? You know, what kind of an attitude is that? I think often in a position of leadership, if we're not careful, we are authorized to be in this position, to be in this place God's given us, but we have no idea what's going on. We're clueless about how God has been merciful to us. You could go even more practical and talk about be punctual, like show up on time. Do what you're supposed to, right? These are practical lessons. But it is a type of leader that I see here in this. Amasa basically is a joke. And no one really takes him seriously. Let's keep going. The next leader we see is Joab. Joab is a powerful but selfish leader. He is powerful. He is a man's man. He is a natural leader, but he is selfish. Let me give you a couple stories of background very quickly with Joab. You know this already, but if you're like me, sometimes Abner gets lost with Abishai. And I forget. So Abner, 50 points for the person who's going to tell me what position Abner filled. Very good. 50 points for Julie. Commit. That should help bring you back out of the red. That's very good. Yeah. Okay. Abner, she said he was the commander of Saul's army. He was the general. He was the military leader of Saul, for Saul. Now, when Saul died, he backed a guy named Ishbosheth. Remember him? For just a short period of time. He backed him instead of David. Well, Joab's men went out while Abner was doing his thing, and he, because you know, he was the military muscle behind Ishbosheth. Abner was. So Joab's like, I'm not messing with Ishbosheth. I want to talk to this guy. Let's go. And remember when Joab said they were there next to the pond or the lake or whatever. And he said, let the young men arise now and play. Well, it was like war games, except people died. And actual death. So that when Joab took Abner on, he wiped the plate. I mean, he just wiped him out. Didn't kill him, but killed, you know, just easily manhandled his men. But in that struggle, somebody really important died. Even though Abner was not killed, and most of Abner's men were killed in ratio. Like a lot more were killed from Abner's side. But somebody important died that day. And Abner killed him. Who was it? It was Asahel. Asahel was one of these guys that was looking for personal glory. And that we're talking about the strength, you know, versus the liability. So he went after him. Abner killed him. Okay, so later on, remember what happens. David makes a feast for guess who? Abner. Because Abner says, look, I can help you become king, David. And Abner and Joab was like, what are you talking about? This guy is our enemy. And Joab was not a politician. He saw things very clearly. The problem was he saw things his own way. This is how things are. Now, there's nothing wrong with knowing who your friends are and your enemies are. There is something wrong with determining who your friends are and enemies are without God's help and without outside influence. There is something wrong with that. Why? Because you and I, left to our own devices, we pick who we like, not who is right or who is good. We pick who our flesh is attracted to. And so that was Joab. Joab had, and sometimes I've been around guys like, I don't care, man. I like who I like. Well, what if he's wrong? Do you still like him and encourage him? And you know what I'm saying? You ever been around somebody like that? Where you know, she's acting like, I'm sorry. I'm a loyal person. That's good, unless that the person happens to be doing wrong. Are you loyal to them and back them and stand up for them? You follow what I'm saying? Joab was that way. Joab said, I don't care. Because he was powerful, but selfish. He used his power for his own personal gain. So David makes the feast for Abner. And Abner promises David, I'll help you become king. So what does Joab do? Joab goes out and kills Abner. And how does he do it? Under the fifth rib. With charity, of course. And he kills him because he killed his brother. So that's story number one. Story number two is where we are here. We have Absalom who rebels. Absalom makes Amasa the captain of the host instead of Joab. So slight number one. Joab kills Absalom because David would not do what he had to do. He wouldn't touch him. So Joab says, all right, fine. That's what I'm saying. Asahel, Joab, Abishai, these guys they have bloodlust. Like they're, let's go. Let's do this. They were like, you know, very little brain power, but lots of brawn. Just get in there and get her done, you know. And so Joab goes after Absalom and he kills him. David wouldn't touch him. But it was the only way, of course, to stop the revolution, right? So then David, after that, David makes Amasa after Joab goes and ends the revolution, basically. I'm trying to be fair to Joab. He ends the revolution by killing Absalom. And so what does David do as a result? He goes back and he says, okay, before he even comes back into Jerusalem, Amasa, you're the captain of the host instead of Joab. And it's partly maybe a political move because he's trying to mollify the people that were following Absalom. And he's trying to, you know, calm everybody down a little bit. But I think more than that, from what I can tell, he's sick and tired of Joab. And David was not making good decisions. Joab was a better military leader by far. But Joab was his own man doing his own thing. And you know why? Because David was doing his own thing. David did his own thing, and then he told Joab, cover it up. And Joab said, yes, sir, got some chips in the game. I got you where I want you, David. And now Joab is doing his own thing, whatever he wants. Sometimes it helps David, sometimes it doesn't matter. at the end of the day, Joab is a bad leader because he uses his power for selfish gain. Sometimes it really helps people. I mean, it helped Israel for Absalom to be dead. It wasn't right for him to kill him. David told him not to, but somebody needed to take care of it, and he was willing to get his hands dirty and get the job done. The problem was he went after Absalom because he wanted to be the guy who got the glory. And he didn't care about what David said. Now, he tried to help David. He'd say, hey, you can't be sitting here crying. You know, that was after he killed Absalom. He tried to help. There were some things that he did well. But at the end of the day, it was Joab's agenda that Joab was most concerned about. So when we think about leadership, okay, now when I say leadership, ladies, don't count me out. And I understand if you're in the work world, you're right in there with me, right? They're talking about leadership for the ladies and all that. Okay, what I'm talking about here is influence. The biggest thing about leadership is influence. In other words, if you say, hey, let's go get a pizza. The people that listen to you and go get a pizza are the ones that are following you. If you say, well, I think this, via Facebook or text or whatever or conversation, and people listen to you and you influence them, you are leading them. So it's not a question of whether or not you are a leader. It's a question of what kind of leader are you? Are you leading people for selfish gain? Joab was unhinged. He was an engine that was stuck wide open with no one at the steering wheel. He had lots of power, but he had no control. He didn't want any control. He wanted what he wanted, vengeance. Now let's look at what it says here. What Joab did. We already read it, but I just want to touch a couple things. Notice that Joab had the ability to get in close to people. He could play the part. He could be what he had to be at the moment. And you saw the deception of Joab in verse number 8, chapter 20, verse 8, that he pretends to drop his sword. Why? So that he had an excuse to get down and stand up with the sword. And what does he do? He takes a sword and he draws Amasa in close to him with his beard, which is a common thing. It was like, you're the man. Bring him in and give him a kiss, which I can't help but think of Judas when he came in close to Jesus. Right? But notice, he's bringing people in to stab him. He's manipulating Amasa's emotions. He's referencing his family connection. You're my cousin. We're buds. We go way back. Amasa, remember that time at Uncle Dave's house? It was crazy, wasn't it? Boom! Now, you say, well, I would never do that. Well, good. I mean, you shouldn't be stabbing people under the fifth rib, okay? That's good. But do you find it tempting to try to manipulate people into liking you so that you can get your agenda across to them? This is easy to do. We all know how to get what we want. Some people just say, I don't care, but, right? Some people try to be nice and play the card of being nice so that they can bring people in close and get their agenda done. Now, if you've ever been married, you know what I'm talking about. Right? It's easy to do. But it's not right. I'm not saying you shouldn't be nice to people. And I'm not saying that you should not trade with people. I think that that's just a normal, a human thing to do. But another level is charity. Charity is more concerned about the good that you get, regardless of what I get. It's actually trying to help you, genuinely help you, with no strings attached. That's hard to do. Let me say even further. That's impossible to do in the power of the flesh. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. What does that do? Charity says, I love my kids not because they obey me. I do for them because they are gifts from God. God has been kind to me, and I'm going to give to these children, and I'm going to be sweet to them. I'm not saying you don't discipline them or correct them or whatever. I'm going to do what's right because I love them. I'm going to serve my spouse and love my spouse, not because of what they're going to give to me. And how do you know that you're doing it with charity? You know that you forgot, you know that you've done something charitably when you can forget the kindness that you did to someone. You no longer remember, because sometimes it's like, well, remember last week I made you a cup of tea. I'm pulling my weight here. You know what I'm saying? It's just easier to trade and to barter. But true charity is not looking to pull people in simply for the case of our own agenda. It is saying this is what is best. And so I think Joab is a bad leader, not just for this area, but watch, he brings them in, and this guy is a good leader. He's a man's man. He's decisive. Now, a good leader does not mean a good man. But he leads. Look what he does. He kills him in one blow. Verse 10. He sheds out his bowels to the ground. You know, you don't just haphazardly walk up to a guy and just like. I mean, he knew what kind of a blow he was intending to do the whole time before he ever dropped the sword on the ground. He knew exactly what he was going to do. And he stood up, grabbed him, kissed him, and cut him in a way that his intestines fall out, like the internal organs fall out on the ground. That's the kind of person that can get the job done. He is exactly the kind of man we want on the battlefield. Is exactly. But notice, he's killing his cousin. He's killing a man that was authorized by the king. Weak though he may be, he was the king's man. And he told, who did he tell to go out? Because Amasa wasn't getting the job done. Who did he tell to go out? Joab's brother, Abishai. He said, Abishai, go and take care of business because this thing is going to get out of hand. He went, but Joab goes and takes over. You know why? Because Joab was a leader. He knew. You cut the head off the snake and the battle's over. He instinctively knew that. But don't try to tell me, Joab, that you're pure of heart and you're this great military leader that only cares about the greatness of the kingdom of Israel. No, you have a personal agenda. Once Joab killed Amasa, he took back over the entire group. And what's interesting about Amasa, he should have known this, but he didn't learn from history. He should have known that Joab is a killer. And when he wants to get close to you, be careful. Be careful. He was the kind of guy that had a reputation, but Amasa, apparently, again, he was clueless. Look at verse 13. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab. Well, Abishai is the one that was commissioned, verse number 6. But now everybody goes. Why? Because Joab was a leader. He was a good leader of men. And I'm just trying to tell you that just because you have the ability to influence people and get them to do what you think you want them to do does not make you a good person or a godly leader. This is the thing that is leadership comes with attention, attention that not ATT attention, a tension. What is that? God gives you power for edification, not for destruction. So God gave you that relationship in which she listens to you. Wonderful. It's for her edification, not for her destruction and your glorification. God gave you an opportunity to influence there at work, to mentor those people, to guide that young man. He gave you an opportunity to influence. It's not for you. It's for that person. And that's what really brings us to the last leader. But first, Joab here, he had the power, but he used it for personal gain. He was a guy who was feared, but he was not loved. How do I know that? Because nobody would follow his word over David's word when he said, don't kill Absalom. Joab said, I'm going to go kill him. Why don't you guys kill him? He said, we're not doing that. The king said, no. They only followed him because of fear. He had natural leadership, but when you followed him, you followed a trail of blood. Because he led for personal gain. He destroyed anyone who got in the way of his dream, which was what? Commanding the army. That was his dream. And he said, that's the only thing I want. And you can imagine Joab thinking in his mind, is it too much for me to ask? I'm the best soldier that Israel has. Correction, he was probably not the best soldier. David was the best soldier. And Joab is the one that gave, David was the one that gave Joab the opportunity. And yet, you can just hear in his head, is it too much for me to ask? I just want to lead the army. Everybody knows I'm the best. And he couldn't accept it. He wanted to be a leader, and he was a leader, but it was for personal gain. And let's look at the last one here as we close. Leader number three. This man is invisible, but influential. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, this is verse 11, chapter 20, verse 11. Stood by him and said, he that favoreth Joab and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. Notice here, this is an influential leader who, number one, knows what the mission is. Now, I said invisible, and that's not the biggest part of this whole thing, I guess, because a lot of people are invisible. A lot of people are flies on the wall. Nobody needs to know my name. Okay, great. We already don't know your name, so you're good. I'm glad that you're humble. Thank you for reminding us of that. Right? Not to be too sarcastic, but sometimes people act like, you know, I don't want to be anything. I just build me a cabin in the corner of glory. I won't even need to see Jesus. I just want to humble. You know, okay, we get it. We get it. But at the same time, the Lord does use people who are invisible. And it's not, you're not noticed because you are invisible. You are noticed because of what you do, though you may be invisible. You see the difference? You're not noticed because nobody sees you, and you're not used of God because you're invisible. You're used of God because you can do something that helps God's people without being known for it. You don't have to have your name attached to what God allows you to do. Notice, who is this guy? One of Joab's men. And verse number 12, and when the man... Who is he? No one knows. He's just in the group. But notice what he has, what he does. He is an influential leader because he knows what the mission is. What's the mission? The mission is to quell the rebellion, to stop Sheba. That's the mission. So he says, he that favoreth Joab, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. You know what Joab's doing? He's standing there, breathing heavy, with blood dripping off his sword. Go on. Don't mess with me, man. Don't mess with me. I came up hard. I don't play. We don't play. That's all he's doing. He's stuck on his passion and his emotion. And somebody's like, hey, if you like Joab, go after him. Follow him. Go. If you're for David, go that way. Here's a guy that nobody knows who it is, and he's directing the army. He's directing the people to do what David wanted them to do. Number two, here's a man who knows where people are stuck. This is an influential leader. Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. This is a gruesome scene. He's not dead yet. Enough said, right? And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway. I mean, highway, it's built for lots of traffic, lots of people. I mean, he's got a rubbernecker. You know how many times we sit in traffic because of rubberneckers? And aren't you glad that you don't slow down when you go by? You just don't even look. You just, right? We're all rubberneckers. But everybody, this is just like out here in 23. Everybody's going to slow down and look. And so he sees the problem. He removed Mesa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. You see, people here could not get past the crisis. They could not get past this gruesome scene. And an influential person is someone who can help people get past the point where they're stuck. These people all had a mission. This guy says, hey, the mission is we go after this guy, Sheba. And then he looks at them and he said, oh, that's why you're not moving. That's why you're not making progress. You want to be influential? Here's how you're influential with people and edify them. You find out where they need help and you help them. Help them. You don't have to draw people after yourself. Why? It's not about you and your glory. It's about helping them. And you know, God will use you in ways that maybe no one ever really knows. But let me ask you this. Who won the MVP on this day for this game? I'm giving it to this guy. Because even though Amasa had the title, he didn't have the power. Even though Joab had the power, he didn't have the character to care about the team, about the group, about the nation, or let alone the king's word. Here's a guy who was invisible. No one knows who he is. And yet he influenced people So he knows, number one, what the mission is. Number two, he knows where people are stuck. And then thirdly, he helps people make progress towards the mission. Watch, verse 13. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab. And you know what's somewhat ironic and maybe sad? Here's a guy who was influential, and when he acted, it helped the people, but they end up following this guy, Joab, who's a murderer. Sometimes it feels like your work is, you do your best, you help people, and then it's in vain. It's not in vain. The Bible says, he that covereth a transgression seeketh love. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. And above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves. This is 1 Peter 4:8. For charity shall cover the multitude of sins. You know, one of the best things you might do for people is to help them get past a place where they feel that their life is ruined. They've made mistakes. They've committed a sin. They are stuck on a personality trait and they can't make any progress. And your word in due season can come along and can cover up that nasty, gruesome old nature and can say, you know what? God has something for you to do. God can help you. God, there's more. It's out there. Don't worry about this dead body. I mean, let's just cover that up with charity. Let me just cover that up with a kind word and reaching out. And how about this? In your heart, praying for that person and then saying a word, something along these lines. I believe in you. Well, they need to man up. Okay. You're not, this is not for you. I'm talking about people who see the wounds that other people have. Who see where people are stuck. Who have a sense of when people are discouraged and are stuck and need a word to help them. That could be a ministry. Listen, you're not going to get a title that says Chief Encourager of Hope Baptist Church. But I can tell you one thing, you're going to be influential, though you may be invisible. And that may not be something anyone else knows, but you know who knows? Three people know. You know. That person knows. And God knows. Is that enough? Is that enough for you? Is it enough for you to know that you can encourage that person? And it builds you up on the inside when you're building them up? That person is built up. And God the Father is glorified. I think that's plenty, right? That should be plenty. So let me encourage you to be the invisible, if necessary, but influential leader. Thank you for being here tonight. We're going to take some time to pray.